We've already started. Now we can.
But yes, I mean, let's start the recording, is what I mean.
Yeah.
That's the greatness. Even the Bittul Torah is Talmud Torah.
I would have missed it. That I only listened to the recording.
I know, you have no idea what you miss just by listening to the recordings.
I can estimate by the length of the recording how much I missed.
Right. Well, in other words, sometimes yes, sometimes no. Daf Gimel Amud Beis, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines in the down in the wide lines. Rav Chisda, remember this idea of Rosh Hashanah L'Malachim. Mm. You've been reviewing.
Yeah.
Rosh Hashanah L'Malachim is in Rosh Chodesh Nisan, but that is for Jewish kings. The Gemara says Rav Chisda suggests that Rosh Hashanah L'Malchei Umot HaOlam is from Tishrei. Why would you need to have a Rosh Hashanah L'Malchei Umot HaOlam? No, in other words,
we're still writing Shterot.
The idea that there's this, the same reason that we had to have a set objective date where the date turns over, all the sugyot that we learned in the first passages of the Gemara, that had to do with Shterot. So, and there's nothing, this is a Dine Mamonos, this is a Dine Shteros halacha. If you live in a place without a Jewish king, but with a Goyish king, as Jews did, probably for more of their existence than they had Jewish kings, so you still needed to date your checks. You still needed to date your shtarot.
Like an elephantine. Like an elephantine.
Yes. Oh, I read that on the plane. It was very interesting. Did you read that, what Tom sent around?
I didn't have a flight yet, so I haven't
known. No, I thought you sent it to everyone. Do you want to summarize that?
It was a Jewish community in Elephantine, which is in Upper Egypt.
That's that.
On this island. In Hebrew sources, it's called Nev or Nyoy or something. Nunvav. And we found there's a treasure trove of documents from there. And there's a very interesting thing is, I think in the time of, they were there in the time of Bayit Sheni, and they were mercenaries for the Egyptians, and they had their own mikdash. And then the Persians invaded. There was some local thing, and their mikdash was destroyed. So they wanted to rebuild the mikdash, and you know, because of politics,
I think this was a Jewish.
It was a Jewish mikdash, and you know they had their, you know, kind of like what we see in Bayit Rishon, that they believed in, you know, Yud Kei Vav Kei God, but they also believed in another god, in Asherot, and consorts. So they asked the Persian king.
It didn't have animal sacrifice, right? Is that correct?
I think not. Right. It only had minchot,
right?
Because that you can only do in Yerushalayim. And so they wanted to ask the Persian king if they could rebuild, and the Persian king was savvy enough that he didn't want to say yes or no. He said, ask the guys in Yehuda. You know, ask the Jewish community in Yehuda if it's okay. So we had these letters they sent back and forth to not quite sure who in Eretz Yehuda, but they dated their documents, and they dated them both according to the Egyptian calendar and according to what, if you saw it, you would think is a Hebrew date. And there's a scholarly debate, like, is it a Judean calendar or is it a Babylonian calendar? Because it says, you know, Chaf Bet B'Tishrei or whatever, but you don't know, like, are they referring to the Jewish calendar, you know, and the when Rosh Chodesh is, could be a day earlier or later. If there's a leap month, it could be a month earlier or later. So, but it's interesting is you see the synchronicity between two different calendars, so you could, different people try to make connection between what was happening in the Jewish calendar or what was happening, you know, we know what the dates were. And I forget if I wrote it down, but I think one of the questions you asked was, when the Bavlim, you know, did their dates, you know, did their year start in Nisan or Tishrei? And so I was like doing some, you know, cheapo research on Google, and I found this one article that was written at the beginning of the 20th century by some British author, and he said, you know, regnal years in Babylon were done pretty much the same as they're done here. Because he was a British author, right? So didn't answer, like, what does that mean? You know, you don't know who your audience is. But I dug a little more, and apparently, from what I could see, as opposed to what I would have thought, they apparently used Nisan. So like, in, at least in Babylonia and Persian afterwards, documents when it said...
Well, I mean, it's a long period, though, so the question would... certainly in Megillat Esther, they were talking about it as...
I'm not talking about our Megillat Esther, but when Persians wrote their documents...
No, what I'm saying is, in Megillat Esther, they had adopted the names, but they didn't change the order.
So oh, I'm sorry. Right, it was definitely... No, the names are Persian,
but
Babylonian.
Saying, but they didn't say also change the order of the months at the same time. And had they done...
But when they said... The third year of Ahasuerus.
Nisan is the first month. It's a question of when do we say it's a new year? Just like in our calendar that we currently use, Nisan is the first month, but that
the
doesn't
new year
start
is
in Tishrei. The new year begins.
But for regnal years, it's different. So first of all,
is that really the case? I mean, do you have it?
So the question is, right? If you say the third year of Ahasuerus, and Ahasuerus started in Adar. Right, so according to what I read, you know, Nisan would be called the second year, okay, because they start in Nisan, not in Tishrei, the way that the Gemara says, but that's the way we count, so
according
I don't know.
So
according to what I read, the Babylonians themselves and Persians counted from Nisan.
Why is that like this? Because in Galut Bavel, they adopted. Let's just not say they adopted the name. Let's say they adopted the Babylonian calendar. If they adopted the Babylonian calendar, it would make sense that they would adopt not only the names of the months, but when the year starts as well. And the fact that they don't mention anything in the Megillah about, you know.
About when Malchei Umat Olam starts.
Just say that's what it is. We say Adar is the third, you know, the 12th month, and so then you assume that that's actually like because we're using this new system.
I see what you're saying, right?
I mean, maybe not, but I don't think, you know, if you didn't know that we have this idea of they specifically took the names and whatever, then you might say, okay, they just started using the Babylonian system, and so that was.
Interestingly, by the way, the I looked it up, the British regnal calendar, which I don't know if they use it for official, apparently they don't use it anymore for official documents, starts on the day of the king's ascension. So if it's, you know, March 13th, then the year starts March 13th.
And the next king or queen, it changes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So you go to Wikipedia, it'll show you for every king when the first regnal year.
But one wonders, that's true in the modern period.
No, it goes back to Henry the Conqueror. William the Conqueror. Oh. Yep. I mean, you know, maybe this is retroactively. Maybe they didn't do it that way, but at some point
they
standardized.
Or maybe they didn't have the same worries about Shtar Mukdam that we have. Remember, this whole thing is motivated by the problem of a Shtar Mukdam.
No, I'm sure. I mean, the Shtar Mukdam is a problem for any society. It's
in theory. Or maybe they had other ways around it.
They assumed that kings would reign a long time. I don't know.
Right,
it turned out to be the case frequently.
I mean, we can imagine a parallel universe in which shtarot are not done the way that they're done in our circumstance. Our shtarot, you lend me money, we write a shtar.
I trust you, don't worry.
No, but that's the point. You can't trust me. The halacha says that that we have to make a shtar.
He says you can't trust them.
No, in other words, you can certainly trust me, but your trust does not... Your well-placed trust in me does not circumvent the rabbinic obligation to create a shtar.
Right. And if you give him $1 million, you'd want a shtar anyways, so that your kids would remember...
Or if you didn't trust him, you wouldn't even a shtar wouldn't be there.
No, right. That's the Gemara we learned a while ago in Sanhedrin. Mikara din, I mentioned this, no?
Yeah.
Mikara din, we're standing in the makolet, and I'm 5 shekels short, and you give me 5 shekels, we're meant to make a shtar right there. Now, that's ridiculous, right? That's really, it would be insulting. It would be insulting to you. If somebody came to my office
Not to mention the people behind us in line.
Right.
1 minute.
No, it would be insulting to me. Right? If you lend me 5 shekels, and you make me sign a shtar...
Right.
We're good friends. We're neighbors. I know where you know where I live.
Well, if you wrote him a check, it would be crazy. That's basically a star. And we don't do checks so much anymore. But if you did,
right, but well, in other words, a check is the point. Is that
and
it's if you want to transfer, if you want to transfer the funds through the mechanism of a check, you have to actually write a check. I mean, there's no way around that. So the Gemara says that enachinami, like mikar adin, you're supposed to do that. But since it would mean that I wouldn't ask you for the 5 shekels. So for small sums, we can waive the obligation. But in fact, there is an obligation. Halacha vein morin kein. That's the halacha.
Right.
Okay. So where were we at? So Rav Chisda. We're about 6 lines down in the wide lines. Rav Chisda says that Rosh Hashanah l'malchei umot olam is from Tishrei. And we say, motiv Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef attacks this idea, and he insists that it's from Nisan, even for non-Jewish kings. What's a motiv? Meitve?
I'm going to ask you a question.
Which kind of question?
From a...
Excellent.
Mishnah.
Yeah, close. A mesve, a motiv.
From a Tanaic source.
Yes, yafe. Is an Amora versus an Amora based upon a Tanaic source? So he says, Masiv Rav Yosef. So he brings a pasuk. It's a pasuk from Chagai. Biyom esrim v'arba lechodesh. Chagai is talking about, you remember Chagai, Zechariah, Malachim, they're the last Nevi'im. And they're talking about building Bayit Sheni. Biyom esrim v'arba lechodesh b'shishi b'shnat shtayim l'daryavish. So in the first pasuk, it's the 24th of the 6th month, which is Elul. Elul is before Tishrei. In the second year of Daryavesh's reign, they begin, the rest of the pasuk is, that's when they begin to work on rebuilding Beit HaMikdash. V'chtiv, later, in Chagai, in the next perek, b'shvi'i b'shnat shtayim b'esrim ve'echad l'chodesh. So on the 7th month in the 2nd year, b'esrim ve'echad, on the 21st of Tishrei. So what does that prove? That Rosh Chodesh Tishrei can't be Rosh Hashanah LaMalachim Umot Olam, because here's Daryavesh, and in the 6th month in Elul it's the 2nd year, and then a month later
it's still the second year,
even though what, we've turned the calendar page from Elul to Tishrei, so obviously Rosh Chodesh Tishrei was not Rosh Hashanah LaMalachim Umot Olam. Ve'im ita b'shvi'i b'shnat gimel miboilei. So if it's the next month, it should have been the 3rd year. And it's if Rosh Hashanah L'Malachim is Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, so then this next pasuk should have said it's the 3rd year. Omer Rav Abahu, Koresh Melech Kasher Haya, Lefichach Manulo Kemalchei Yisrael. Enochinami. Rosh Hashanah L'Malchim Umot Olam is when? It's Tishrei. So why is Daryavesh counted from Nisan? Because he was a Melech Kasher. Now, I know what you're saying.
Of course.
Yeah, well, except you read ahead. You learned ahead. So you know that the Gemara is going to ask that question. Yes?
Yes.
Obviously.
Yes.
Here the Gemara says something which, if you haven't looked ahead, which you will have. But imagine, stretch your imaginations and pretend you haven't prepared the Gemara in advance of our shiur. So the Gemara says, Daryavesh XYZ. And the Gemara says, no. The Gemara says, Daryavesh. And then it tells you it's that way because Koresh was Kasher. So what do you assume? You can only assume one of two things. Either the Amora fell on his head, he had a little too much Jim Beam, or there's a typo in the Gemara.
Or they're one and the same person.
Baruch Shekivanta. But the Gemara says, Enachinami. Rosh Hashanah L'Malachi, Malchi Umot Olam is in Tishrei, except for which kinds of Malchi Umot Olam? Kasher. The Kasher kings. So then we can count them like Ki'ilu, like they're Yidden, from Nisan.
You're basically discussing how to refer to the years of the non-Jewish kings, mm-hmm. not according to what they probably had some other system.
Yeah, this is our internal. This is our internal sterot, right? When the pasuk, I mean, who knows? But the Gemara presumes that when Haggai gives you these dates, or later we'll see Ezra gives you certain dates, that's for the Jewish internal conversation. And maybe if you had to go to court against your Persian neighbor, and you had to file court documents in the Persian court, Rachmana Litzlan, you had to go to Archaot Shel Goyim, so you would have had to fill it out on, you know, according to their dates. Right? In other words, it would be the equivalent of someone...
It would be
the equivalent of someone looking back, you know, for some distant civilization after the... What do they say?
The apocalypse will ultimately, inevitably...
So later, as decoding our transactions, they will say, I don't understand. Here's these Jews in Efrat. And today, they wrote documents that said the year is 5779. And they also wrote documents that said the year is 2019. How could it be? Because this is two different dating systems. When they were talking amongst themselves, they used one system. And when they were talking klapei chutz, they used a different system.
I'm not sure which one you're going to say is which. Right. In Efrat or another place.
Yeah. It's a problem. We should be careful to use the Hebrew dates.
Why would I naturally assume that they're one and the same? It could be that there's just two kings.
The Gemara will get to this.
Just a historical question. Did this kind of long after the period of the Jewish kings, and I guess the word, even into the period of non-Jewish kings, did this process of writing shtarot last for a long time? The process of writing with regard to the king's reign?
I think you know.
Like in England and.
Oh, I don't. In meaning in the non-Jewish world.
Right, because there was only a non-Jewish
yeah,
world
in Japan.
After.
I think on all official proclamations in England, you heard about Archie. It's hard to imagine. His Royal Highness
Archie.
So I think the proclamation said something in the year of our, pardon me, the year of our Lord 2019, and the 50, whatever, the 179th reign of Her Majesty Elizabeth E. Austin.
In Japan today, all government documents have...
Yes?
No, that I understand.
Think, well,
the
Jews
I realized this.
Oh, Jews.
Jews writing a star.
Like in America. Yeah. Like in America,
long
they weren't doing
the
anymore.
Period of time when there were no Jewish
no.
kings.
So, in other words, by the Middle Ages,
yeah.
Jewish tarot all use the Anno Mundi system that's in wide use today.
Except for Yemen. Which up until recent decades they used
the year of the reign of the king of Yemen.
The year of the reign of
the Sultan
Alexander's successors.
Oh.
Minyan Shtarot.
Who is Alexander's successor today?
For some reason it starts like the second general after the first general who rebelled. I don't know why, but
it's
Seleucid.
But from the Middle Ages, the system that we use today, the Shanim Lebriot Olam, becomes the universal, and for the purposes of shtarot, it doesn't matter. The point of the shtarot is you want a system that's consistent and universal, and about which. And as if we all say that today is, what is today? Yud Tet. Right. So it's now Yud Iyar Tav Shin Ayin Tet. There's universal consensus on exactly what day that is. Exactly when it begins, exactly when it ends, right? So as long as you have some kind of universal system, it works for the purpose of the shtar being kasher.
No, clearly. I'm just reflecting the fact that there was a long discussion with regard to kings. I wondered historically if that continued in the past. Era of Jewish kings.
So now the Gemara says...
This whole discussion is only for internal Jewish consumption.
That's what the Gemara assumes here.
Like,
right?
Why confuse it? Why didn't you just say, like, does it make a difference what the king is Jewish or not Jewish? Like everybody in Nisan.
I mean, the Gemara assumes that that's not the case. That there would have to be different systems to differentiate between Jewish kings and non-Jewish kings.
Okay.
Why would that be?
Not to, in effect, give the same level of kavod.
Yeah. I mean...
I think that might be... Like a folk, not a folk etymology, but a
back,
a back,
a back,
a, Probably what it is that basically they just did the non-Jewish kings, the Rove were in Tishrei, yeah. And so therefore we did. They said that's what it was, and we, the Jewish kings were in Nisan. So, yeah.
All of the ancient world used a lunar calendar. Egypt didn't use a lunar calendar, did they?
Egypt had a solar calendar. I'm sure they had a lunar calendar way back at some point, but yeah, Julius Caesar borrowed it from Cleopatra. She recommended it to Julius Caesar.
What's the earliest usage of a solar calendar? I mean, in prehistoric times, to whatever degree there was a sense of calendar, it had to have been lunar.
Well, it was... I think calendars were always, you know, like the Jewish / Babylonian calendar, that, you know, the moon is a convenient signpost, so you could talk about a month being 29 and a half days, but when you went to plant your crops, you wanted to know that it was spring.
Right.
I think even the Roman was originally just lunar.
Was?
Lunar.
Was lunar, right.
Yes, it was lunar until... I mean, you know, it was lunar, and then it was like quasi-solar, but it didn't really have a good system.
It was a lunar, in other words, it was like the Jewish calendar, it was a lunar calendar that was somehow aligned to a solar calendar through one mechanism or another of adding a leap year.
It became like a solar calendar that wasn't well-regulated. You know, they had 12 months, and they all had, whatever it was, 30 days, and then they would, you know...
Jimmy around to make sure that the spring didn't come out in the winter.
Yeah, but they didn't jimmy very well, and like some months had 14.
Well, until the Gregorian.
No, until Julius. Julius was like he's the one who instated the calendar, the Photiotir, like we know. It was kind of like the Havdil, the Jewish calendar, except that like every Caesar, every governor could decide, oh, this month's going to have 31 days, and we're going to have 14 months this year, and it was just like. Lahavdil, like the Misrata Pnim was 20 years ago, and they would decide at the last minute to add a month or to, you know, do daylight savings time and not do daylight savings time. Uh-huh. So I forget, there was like some really messed up years right before Caesar when they literally had 14 months and there was 400 and some days long. There was no set.
For agricultural needs?
No, it was for shterot.
Oh, for shterot.
Uh-huh. For shterot and paying your rent and whatever. The local governor of Caesar said, we're having a leap year tomorrow, and the year is 444 days.
Yeah, they used to make money, right?
I'm sure somebody
was
politically motivated.
For taxes. Right? You have to give your new king some more money. You say the tax year is now 14 months instead of 10 months, and then you get, you know, an extra.
Right, so then Julius standardized it to something close to what we use today.
Uh-huh.
And then they added, you know, August, they added a day later on. But
Okay, so anyway, the Gemara says, you see that really Rosh Hashanah L'malchei Umot Olam is Tishrei, and Daryavesh is an exception because we count for him as if he were Jewish.
Of course, exception.
No, Daryavesh is the exception. Ah, the Gemara says Koresh. We'll get to that. Because Koresh was Melech Kasher. Hacha Daryavesh Tanavu Koresh. Right? Who Daryavesh? Who are Tashachsta? Who Koresh, who Daryavesh, who Artashasta. The Gemara says Ben was awake. He realized that the Gemara asks a question about Daryavesh and it gives an answer from Koresh, and the Gemara says, you know what? It's the same guy. Koresh, Daryavesh, Artashasta, they're all the same guy. Koresh, why was he called Koresh? Shemelech Kasher Haya. Koresh was a nickname.
Right, we skip a couple lines, or did I just miss it?
Yeah,
I'm
also seeing, like, I'm not seeing.
Oh, but Esther Mechadim.
You skipped.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I skipped.
You jumped to answer the question.
I jumped.
There were a couple lines
right.
In between.
L'fichach manu lo k'machi Yisrael. Matkif lo Rav Yosef. Oh, because the Gemara itself also skips, as you'll see. Matkif lo Rav Yosef. So Yosef attacks this from a Svara. Right? Rav Yosef says the Rosh Hashanah L'malchei Umot Olam is from Nisan. And the answer was... Daryavesh Koresh was Keil. We counted him like a Jew, but in principle, it's from Tishrei.
Right.
So he says Chada. He had two attacks. One Chada de Imkain Kashu Kreya Hadade. Dichtiv. Now, this is a problem with two psukim. Now, these psukim are from Ezra. Now, the problem with the psukim in Ezra is that they're in Aramaic. So I'm going to cheat.
I don't like the Gemara.
I was going to say it's
No, but the Aramaic of the Gemara is different than the Aramaic of whatever little Aramaic we know from the Gemara. But the psuk, right? I mean, I once learned Ezra in college, but that was a long time ago. Sheitzi basa dana ad yom tlata lirach adar dehi shnat shet lemalchut dar yavesh malka. The pasuk says that the Beit HaMikdash was completed on the third day of the month of Adar, in the sixth year of Daryavish. V'tanya, then there's a brayso that says, Be'oto zman l'shana haba'ah, the next year, Ala Ezra Mabavel v'galut imo. And as they rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, the Beit HaMikdash is, Bayit Sheni, is built, is finished on the third of Adar, in the sixth year of Daryavish. A year later, and a bit, in Nisan, Ezra and his group of ragtag band of chalutzim, of Shavei Tzion. You didn't catch the reference?
Ragtag.
I'm surprised at you. They come back to Eretz Yisrael. The year later, v'chtiv v'yavo Yerushalayim b'chodesh hachamishi hi shnat hashvi'it lemelech. So Ezra arrives in Yerushalayim in the fifth month, meaning in Chodesh Adar, in the seventh year of the king. So this is
fifth month is Adar,
isn't it? No, fifth month is Av. What did I say?
You said Adar.
No, I meant Av.
Okay. They're coming from Tishrei. I was trying to figure it out.
Right. So, in other words, in Gimel Adar of the seventh year, of the sixth year of Daryavesh, they finished building Beit HaMikdash. A year later, Ezra sets out from Bavel, and he arrives. It's a long trip. He arrives in Av. So, how much longer is that? It's like almost a year and a half later. But a year and a half later, in Chodesh Av, it's now no longer the sixth year of Daryavesh, but it's the seventh year of Daryavesh. So let me ask you, if Rosh Hashanah L'malchei Umot Olam is in Nisan, what year should it be? What? It should be the eighth year. Right? Because they build it in the sixth year in Adar, meaning in the last month of the sixth year. Then a few weeks later, it's Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Now we're in the seventh year. Then a year later on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, he leaves Bavel and he arrives a few months later in Av, meaning there's already two Nisans in between.
Maybe it wasn't the year after, but just a few months.
What? No, but it's not. The psukim are clear that he doesn't leave. He leaves the year after, L'shana Haba.
But L'shana Haba started.
But elsewhere, it's clear that it's a year. It's a full year. He doesn't come immediately when the Beit HaMikdash is built. It's a full year later he sets out. So there's been two Nisans in between. So it should be the eighth year. How many Tishreis have been in between? One. And since only one year has progressed from the sixth to the seventh, what does that sound like? When is Rosh Hashanah la Daryavesh?
In Tishrei.
Va'od midame. And then he has another question. He says, your answer about Koresh, what the heck's Koresh got to do with it? So Koresh was kasher, right? So you want to say Koresh was an exception to the rule. But we're talking about
Daryavesh.
So the Gemara answers the two questions, but out of order. So the Gemara says, Tana, who Koresh, who Daryavesh, who Artaxasta. All three, it's the same guy. Koresh, there were different kings by different, there was Koresh 1, there was Koresh 2, there was Koresh 3, right? But this Koresh, this Daryavesh that we're talking about is also called Koresh. Why was he called Koresh? Because he was, I'll take it, Koresh Ella Kasher. Why was he called Daryavesh? Because that was his actual name. Why was he called Artaxasta? Well, what's Artaxasta?
He's a king.
Avimelech, Paro, Artaxasta, Her Royal Majesty.
Just names, generic name.
Right. Umashmo, Daryavishmo. That was his actual name. That's what his mommy called him. So Mikol Makom Kashya, so Beseder. Naniach that you're right, you can pull out this source about Koresh and hoodwink me to think that it's the answer for Daryavish. But that's not even the strongest question. The strongest question is that your math doesn't work out. Right? It's the sixth year, a year and a half later, Ezra shows up, it's the seventh year, right? So then it has to be that the Rosh Hashanah, Nisan can't be the Rosh Hashanah, because if that were the case, then when Ezra shows up, it would be the eighth year. It has to be Tishrei.
So it's basically
so the Gemara says, Mikol Makom Kashya.
The pasuk against the pasuk. It's not even, I mean, the pasuk from Haggai and the pasuk from Ezra seem to be in contradiction. It's not even according to the Sfar about when the kings are, just those two psukim seem to be in contradiction.
No, and why?
Because we learned from Yosef that from the pasuk in Haggai that it was that the two psukim in Haggai would teach us at Nisan,
right?
And then the two psukim in Ezra are teaching us that it's Tishrei,
right?
So it's not even a question of just like whatever assumption we might have about when it would be. It's just there's apparently a contradiction between these two psukim,
or between the drasha and the two psukim.
Is it drasha?
Yeah, okay.
Well, you said it's not. Yeah. It's pshat. So yeah. Once that's the case. And you can say, anytime you have a contradiction between two psukim, you'll find, an explanation for one or the other, and then you can go back to everyone can have whatever you want it to be.
Anyway, but Mikol Makom Kashya, still, even if you want to say that Koresh and Daryavish are the same person, it's still difficult because of the math. So, Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, Lo Kashya. Khan, in terms of Daryavish, so he says Daryavish, sometimes we counted him like a Jewish king, and sometimes we count them like a Goyish king. So in the beginning, we counted him like a Jewish king. And then something happened, and we saw that he wasn't so kasher. Right? El Shuhu Hechmitz. Mazi Hechmitz?
He went bad.
He went bad. He turned sour. And then we went back to counting him. And that's really difficult, right? In other words, like Kielu, well, it's like in Japan. They have to change the whole dating system in the middle. No, because that's, in other words, we want to look to psukim that use some kind of dating system with kings. So all of these Persian kings.
He was a bad king. We know that from history.
Yeah.
We know that he switched over from good to bad. And you couldn't find a better person?
No, in other words, the pasuk is pointed to because it contains a contradiction. We have to reconcile the psukim. According to one set of psukim, it seems like Rosh Hashanah LaMelachim is Nisan. According to another, it seems like it's got to be Tishrei.
So between the second year of his reign and the seventh year of the reign, he went sour.
Something went wrong. Kan kodem shechmitz, kan lachel shechmitz. So now the Gemara says, Matkif lor of Kahana, umi echmitz. What? Did he really go bad? In that one, while Ezra was on the road, by the time, when Ezra sets out, Daryavish is a good king. By the time Ezra reaches Yerushalayim, Daryavish is a bad king.
I don't know if I should just now ask any questions from the Gemara like this. And if a Jewish king goes bad, we also change the calendar?
No, because according to all opinions, Jewish kings, both the good and the bad, they go with Nisan.
On what basis do we,
Wasn't there some idea also that Daryavish was Esther's son?
Either prepare ahead or don't prepare ahead.
I didn't prepare ahead. Listen to your show last time.
So yes, we're going to come to that momentarily. So Matkif Lor of Kahana Umi Echmitz Vachtiv. Right? The Pasuk says, when Ezra shows up in Yerushalayim, what has he got? He's got a letter of recommendation from the king. I mean, after all, the Persians back in Shushan are controlling what happens in Eretz Yisrael. The fact that we were able to rebuild Beit HaMikdash was because they allowed it. Now, in the rabbinic imagination, why would a Persian king allow that to happen?
But he's really a Jewish king.
Yes, really is a Jew. There is no end of legends.
So there's no such thing as a pure goy.
Well, no. In other words, if a king or queen does something that's good for the Jews, so what do we suspect?
It has to be.
They really must be Jewish. There were agadot like this about kings of Poland, about queens of Poland.
Trump.
What?
Trump.
No, in other words, the fact that the idea that Trump actually has a Jewish daughter, has Jewish grandchildren, and is doing things that are perceived, listeners of the podcast, listeners of the recording, will have been able to intuit my opinions about Trump since Steve has returned to the benches of the Beit Midrash. We won't go there. Mazel tov on the bar mitzvah, by the way. But there's no doubt that...
You can say whatever you want about Trump.
But there's no doubt that many of Trump's actions are viewed favorably here in Israel, and people...
What do they call him in evangelical circles when they're trying to deal with his clearly problematic moral behavior? They call him Cyrus.
Right.
They call him Koresh. Because they say, here's a guy who was not so great, but he was doing God's will. And he's,
I think Truman took that once, too, no?
Was at least a little bit more.
No, but sure. But he also.
So the Gemara says. The Gemara says, so when Ezra shows up, he's got a letter from Daryavish. And the letter says, Uma chashchan uvnei torin v'dichrin v'amrin la alavan la. Elo Shmaya Chintin Malach Amar Umshach Kimaamar Ke Hanya de Bushalem Lehave Mit Yehev Lahon Yom Biyom Delo Shalu. And the letter that he brings with him tells the governors of Yerushalayim, the governors of Yehuda, that these Jews, whatever they need, whether they need bulls or rams or sheep for the korbanos to God in heaven, Aloha Shmaya, God in heaven, if they need wheat or salt or wine or oil, whatever they need, whatever the Kohanim who are in Yerushalayim say that they need, you should supply for them day by day without fail. All right? So what does that sound like? What kind of king does that sound like? Not just a good king, but a king who's got a little Yirah Shamayim. Nobody suspects Trump of having Yirah Shamayim. No one suspects that Trump moving the embassy to Yerushalayim or recognizing the Golan or hacking the election to make sure Bibi gets reelected, is because he wants God Almighty on his side.
How do you know?
I'm reporting. I'm reporting my impression that people do not suspect that.
Oh.
He wants the evangelicals on his side, right? And if God votes like them, so then he's happy to have God's vote also. But I'm sure that Trump is happy to leave God out of it. But here, Daryavish. He says, here's a blank check. Anything you need for this holy temple, right? Karbanos, or Zvochim, Menachos, Yayin Lekiddush, Ner Lehavdalah, you got it. Whatever you need, whatever the Kohanim, you have a blank check. For whatever the Kohanim say you need, and you can deliver this to the governor in Yehuda, and he will listen. So Omer Lo Rabbi Yitzchak, so Rabbi Yitzchak says, Rav Kahana, Rabbi Mitunach, I will answer you from your own bushel. Right? In other words, Rav Kahana brings a posuk as his proof that Daryavish is a good king. So Rabbi Yitzchak says, the very Mitunach, like you know what a tenna is?
A basket.
Right? So from your basket of answers contains the refutation. Right? It means like I'm gonna beat you with your own proof text. Dila Havon, the Hemshech of the Pasuk is Dila Havon, Mehakrivon, Nichochin, La Elo, Shmaya, Umatsalian, Lechaye, Malka, Uvenohi. And you know, in that Mikdash where I just wrote you a blank check for, you know what you should do? The reason I'm giving you this blank check for your Beit HaMikdash is so that you should daven to the King of Heaven for the king and the king's progeny. So he says, you see what? Was he really, did he really have such Yiras Shamayim? Was it really the Shem Shamayim? No.
He was just doing it for the evangelical vote.
Has Rabbi Yitzchak never heard of Misha Berach at all?
Oh! David, as you know, from having looked ahead. Uman David, David Hochi, Lav Malusahi. Who says acting this way is not the proper way to act? Haven't you ever heard of Misha Berach? Right? Haven't you ever heard of Misha Nodav? What?
What purpose of Misha Berach is that sure she gets stuck?
You give tzedakah, right? So you should get a little refuah shleima, that you should have a little parnada, you should have a hatzlocha, you should have. Vahatanya.
The more money you give, the more names you can list.
Vahomer. Vahatanya. The Brisa says, Haomer sela zu letztaka b'shvil sheyichyu vanai. If somebody says, I'm giving this $100 bill so that my children should live and prosper and be well, u'b'shvil she'eskeba l'chaye olam haba, or that I should merit olam haba, harei zeh tzadik gamur. There's nothing wrong with this.
Unless he's a guy.
Unless he's a goy. So the Gemara says, Lo kasha, can be Israel, can be of the kochavim. When a Jew does it, when a Jew gives tzedakah and says, in the merit of this tzedakah, my mami, my tate, should have a refuah shleima. My children should find good shiduchim. I should be matzliach. So that doesn't undermine the Yirat Shamayim. In other words, if you start off with a kind of within the context of your Shemayim, so then that's fine. But if you start off as an Oved Avodah Zarah, not just a Goy, but an Oved Avodah Zarah, so then you think when the Jew gives the tzedakah and says, "I hope that there'll be refuah shleima and hatzlocha and parnosa," so what does he really say?
That
I'm serving God, I'm doing mitzvot, and I hope that when Oved Avodah Zarah does it, he thinks he's bribing God. He thinks that's how religion works. So when Daryovish gave this money, right, it was not sincere. In other words, the point is you can't bring this pasuk to say that he was kasher. Right? The fact that somebody gave charity does not ipso facto make them kasher. Right? The Rishonim point out that when we say this about a Jew, it's when he's got a proven track record of giving tzedakah. In other words, the Jew that never gave tzedakah. And then, suddenly, for the first time in his life, something goes wrong. There's illness at home. And he runs and he's stuffing the pushka and saying, in this merit, so then even there you can question it. Now, Daryavesh, but we'll come back to this next week.
In 2 weeks.
But Daryavesh.
Next week
on the way. Daryavesh. So you see this rat. You see this Tosfos Shnat Esrim.
You got one more here, so.
He says Daryavesh ben Esther. Shenivna Bayit B'Yamav. That well-known idea. That Daryavesh is the son of Esther and Ahasuerus. But Rashi, over here, well, we'll come to it next time, you see the Rashi about and Daf Dalid, about 10 lines down, Dibur Matul Kalbata, he makes the presumption that Daryavesh is a goy. Rashi did not accept this idea that Daryavesh, this Midrashic idea that Daryavesh was the son of Esther, which is a fairly well-known idea. Right? But it's not universal, so not universal that Rashi himself does not accept it.